Welcome to Episcopals, bringing you the latest in faith-based advocacy from the Episcopal Church Office of Government Relations. We're underway with Lindsay Warburton from the Office of Government Relations. You know, in preparing for this, I realized how overwhelmed I am with just so many opportunities to reach out and advocate for important things going on in our government. You know, including things we often overlook, like rules and regulations. So I'm glad that you're here today to talk about that with us.
No, absolutely. And I know that we've asked our network to comment on a few rules, and we try to be so explicit with how to do it and how to go through it. And I feel like sometimes we just need to go back to basics and say, what even is a rule?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's legislation. Okay, that's clear. Federal, state, local level. Okay, you know, still feel confident. I can navigate that, but you know, it gets a little murkier. I think it feels like there's a higher bar sometimes to engage with rules or regulations or executive orders. You know, is there really a way for us as advocates to have an influence?
100%. And I will be completely candid. Before starting this job 4.5 years ago, I was also pretty in the dark. Have no fear. I'm happy to go through a little bit of the basics before we jump into the topic at hand. I've been even more exposed to the world of rules and regulations since working in immigration space as well.
And speaking of basics, Lindsay, I think this is your first time on the Episcopals podcast. So how about you introduce yourself for our audience?
Absolutely. Lindsay Warburton, I'm our immigration and refugee policy advisor. Like I said, I've been with the office for quite a bit, started out as an intern and have worked my way up. I'm happy to be on the podcast. Happy this is finally happening. This is great. And happy to be here. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also, you know, just really pleased with our Western North Carolina takeover.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into it then. You know, what are regulations, you know, and how are I hear different terms, regulations, rules, executive orders, memos. What are regulations? How are they different from rules? Sure. What's sort of the process there? Kind of some definitions for us.
Definitely. I think where we have to start is the law of the land, which is Congress and what they pass, often referred to as statute, right? Or the U.S. Code, right? That is, you know, that's the fundamentals. Although if you want to go back even further, you can go back to the Constitution, which the laws of the land have to follow. But that is that, you know, that's the strongest way that we can pass laws and take action, right? Regulations or rules, I think they're pretty interchangeable. Regulations are often thought of kind of in conjunction as a whole, and whereas rules are kind of specifically, but a rule is just a regulation. And rules and regulations are to interpret the statute, the law that gets passed. And sometimes Congress passes laws and they don't know exactly how they're going to be and how they're going to work in practice. And so part of the purpose of rules and regulation is to interpret that. There's a immigration example, for example, that said, you know, the attorney general will set how many days a tourist is allowed to be in the United States. And then rules and regulations were used to interpret that and determine an adequate number of days. What does that actually look like? Right. Mm-hmm. And I'll get more into, you know, how rules are created and proposed. Executive orders are similar. They have a basis in statute and in the legislation, but they're a little bit easier to go through, but they also are easier to take away as well. Sometimes you'll often hear of memorandums as well. We might as well go through the whole executive order.
Sure, absolutely.
rundown. Memos are the kind of the least hold up, and those are really guidance for executive agencies based on rules and based on law as well. So that's kind of your basic idea of how executives might take action as well.
Yeah. No, thank you for that. And so, I mean, I this is not an area I'm an expert in by any means. And certainly being in the immigration space, yeah, it's one where you have to be much more versed in this type of action. For a number of reasons. In part, you know, it sounds like the level of specificity that's needed. It's a tool for being more specific, but also at times when Congress is not acting, on particular issues like immigration, there are ways, or at least attempts at stepping in different ways to tweak our immigration policies.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head, and particularly in the immigration space, it is practically the only way things are getting done. But
Well, you know, you mentioned sort of using executive orders or others as well, that they can sort of be, quote unquote, taken away. Mm-hmm. I hear that as sort of thinking of examples of the past few presidential administrations. Executive order use is higher, I think, than it has been historically. And some of those executive orders are simply to undo an executive order of the previous presidential administration. That is an example, but maybe there are others. What are the pros and cons to taking action through rulemaking?
Yeah, I think rulemaking is similar, but as I mentioned, it has a slightly higher threshold than executive orders. It's probably the most extensive after passing laws. Some of the pros is that it does have a little bit more standing than an executive order. And why is that? Because the rulemaking process has a process, right? Mm-hmm. The administration's job is to determine what the basis is in the law in order to make this rule and regulation. They propose it, and they propose it to the public. They publish it. And there's usually a public comment period that anyone can participate in. It's a little bit hard because some of these are pretty technical, but they have to open it up for public comment. And that is part of a law from Congress that says that anytime you make a rule, you have to open it up for public comment before you finalize it, right? And so there is that level of input that we typically don't get with an executive order or a memo that comes with rules and regulations that not many people are aware of as well. So that's a pretty big pro in that we have the opportunity to engage if we so choose. And also the pro of rulemaking is, as you mentioned, it can go into law quicker than passing legislation through Congress, right? It's something that can take between 30 and 60 days for the comment period. And after that, depending on, the administration does have to go through every single comment and respond to it. But depending on that, the turnaround can actually be pretty quick, especially if the public isn't paying attention. This can go through fairly quickly, which I think can be a pro. It can be a pro for the administration or it can be a pro for the public. I think it depends. And as I mentioned, the biggest pro to rulemaking is it clarifies when the law isn't clear. And so it can really give some meat on the bones of legislation, so to speak.
Sure. It sounds like a lot of these types of actions are maybe just sort of part of the process, right? Of implementing a legislation, implementing law once it's passed. I'd love to hear more about the role of rulemaking when it comes to immigration. What are some of the biggest rules in the immigration space? And, how are you influencing it or even guided by that reality?
I spoke on the pros of rulemaking, but I think immigration has proven some of the cons of it. You can do the reverse process, the reverse comment period, to withdraw rules that subsequent administrations propose. And there's a lot of legal challenges to these rules. There is legislation that governs how you can make rules, like I said. And so you can sue if the administration does not go step by step with how they're proposing those rules, in addition to the substance of the rule, which is challenged often. So that's really tough. And we see that in the immigration space. But I'll zoom out a little bit. As you mentioned, rulemaking and executive action has kind of taken the front seat in the immigration space in particular, and that's primarily because of lack of congressional action. We had a comprehensive immigration bill in 1986. We've had a few more niche bills in 1990, 1996, 2006, if you count border policy as immigration. And then since really this century, we've really kind of failed. And when I say we, I mean Congress, right? There's been lots of legislation on the table that just not has not gotten past the finish line. And so in that absence, you're going to get executive action. You know, probably some of the most notable is something like the 2012 DACA memorandum that started as a memorandum. President Biden actually codified that as a rule, which now we know what that is. We codified that as a rule in order to protect it against the legal challenges that are happening in the court, right? As well. But I think immigration, there's also, you know, lots of other rules that we might not think about. There's been rules on public charge, on temporary workers, pretty much anything you can think of to interpret this law, because the Immigration Law Act of 1965 is actually pretty bare bones, as I mentioned at the beginning. And so we have an entire, books of just regulations that are interpreting these laws. And most of the immigration laws and rules that get passed, the rules that get passed are pretty small. We tend to pay attention when there's big threats to asylum or public charge or things like that. But there's actually a lot of minor things that go on every single day. But we've seen a really high level engagement from the advocacy community on these. You know, I think the most recent rule on asylum that the Biden administration proposed, which has now gone into effect, had tens of thousands of comments. And so I think really since the Trump administration, we've seen an increase in engagement in the rulemaking space. That doesn't come without its challenges. I'm sure that you've seen some of the states are suing the Biden administration and the Trump administration. So that's what some of this increased attention to rulemaking has resulted in, particularly on immigration. States, both Republican and Democratic states, have been suing the federal government based on rulemaking. I mean, as I mentioned before, they are allowed to sue not just on the substance of the rule, whether it is in line with the statute. They're able to sue if the administration doesn't propose the rule in the right way, if they do a memorandum when they really should have done a public comment period, right? So we're seeing an increase in that. And a lot of these cases are going up to the Supreme Court. And so what we're also seeing in the immigration space is an increase in rulemaking because of congressional inaction has led to an increase in courts kind of interpreting these decisions and their legality. It's kind of an interesting space to be in right now.
Yeah. No, and then it sounds like it takes a keen and diligent eye. So in previous, trainings and episodes, we've talked about the need for advocates to have a good story, to know the topic very well, but also that they don't have to be an expert. But in some ways, what I'm hearing, I mentioned I was overwhelmed by the opportunity, but I'm also overwhelmed, you know, by the detail that is required to track some of these rules and regulations. But, you know, I'm grateful that you are here in the Office of Government Relations to track this from an immigration point of view. And I know rules and regulations don't just apply or happen with immigration policy. You know, it really is across the issues that we advocate on. The environment may be one of the other larger sort of areas where rules and regulation changes, executive orders, et cetera, are critical to how our country moves forward and are also opportunities for the general public to engage, as you mentioned, through public comment. So thank you for your time today, Lindsay. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. May I give just a tip to our audiences?
Please.
You know, if you're wanting to dip your toes in, I mean, obviously we have occasional opportunities through the EPPN to get involved, but there's something called the Federal Register. They publish all executive actions. And so just check it out. I mean, the asylum rule that we mentioned, they'll give background and information. You know, you are welcome. You might have to do a little bit more of your own research, but don't let that be an obstacle. Check out the Federal Register online and explore a little bit so that when the next one comes up, you'll be a little bit more informed as well. And just as we've always said, you don't have to be an expert. You just have to care and put your voice out there. And with a little bit of research and a little bit of time, Hopefully we can make a difference.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Lindsay. I appreciate it. And a reminder too, that even if we, some of us may be frustrated with the slow pace, you know, in Congress or maybe the lack of opportunity to engage there, that there's still ways to seek out, you know, action elsewhere.
Definitely. Well, thank you, Alan.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lindsay. And have a good rest of your day. The Office of Government Relations aims to represent the policy priorities of the Episcopal Church to the U.S. government in Washington, D.C., and to influence policy and legislation on critical issues, all while highlighting voices and experiences of Episcopalians and Anglicans globally. The office facilitates the Episcopal Public Policy Network, a grassroots network of Episcopalians engaged in the ministry of public policy advocacy. Take action and learn more by following the links in the description. The Episcopals podcast is produced by the staff of the Office of Government Relations, with the support from our podcast engineer, Ellie Singer, and project manager, Chris Sikkema. Thanks for listening, and join us next time on Episcopals.